This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Alexander the Great is suddenly in. The young Macedonian conqueror is the subject of a new Oliver Stone movie. There's also another cinematic Alexander in the works, directed by Baz Luhrmann. There is a National Geographic DVD documentary about him and several new books. But for now, it is the Oliver Stone movie, starring Colin Farrell, which doesn't seem destined to win many awards, but is likely to imprint images of Alexander on the memories of those who see it. So to help us sort out history's Alexander from Oliver Stone's, we've invited Daniel Mendelsohn, author, journalist, and lecturer in classics at Princeton University. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
First, what grade would you give this Alexander for getting it right?
For getting it right? I would say a sort of a C.
A C?
A C. I mean, there are things that are right. There are things that are hilariously wrong. But the problem, I don't think, is historical accuracy. I think it's just a big stinker of a movie. I think this is the Heaven's Gate of toga and sandal epics, basically. It should put an end to this genre, which was born only a few years ago, or had its renaissance only a few years ago with Gladiator.
Well, here is a clip from Oliver Stone's Alexander that I want you to talk to us about a bit. In it, we hear Colin Farrell as Alexander talking to Hephaestion, his friend, buddy, boyfriend, whatever.
The general is questioning your obsession with Darius. They say it was never meant for you to be king of Asia.
Naturally. They want only to return to their homes rich with gold. But I've seen the future, Hephaestion. I've seen it now 1,000 times on 1,000 faces. These people want, need change.
Some say these Alexandres have become extensions of Alexander himself. They draw people into the cities so as to make slaves.
Alexander as agent of change.
Well, I mean, there's no question that Alexander was an agent of change. I think if I had to vote for the person with greatest impact in terms of the shape of the world, Alexander would probably be at the top of my list in that he Hellenized a great part of the continent of Asia, and by creating a Greek-speaking landmass where there had been none, it facilitated the promotion and spread of Western ideas in places it would never, ever have been possible before. So I think that, yeah, he was an agent of change. Did he speak with lots of pregnant ellipses in his conversation? Probably not, but that's a different question.
His relationship with Hephaestion, which is quite prominent in the movie.
Well, I mean, it seems to be no question that Alexander the Great was essentially a homosexual, as we would think of the word. Clearly, as we know, the Greeks had very different ideas about sexuality. But, I mean, Alexander is, I would say, unusual in that, unlike a lot of Greeks, where a sort of adolescent homosexual relationship was the norm followed by marriage in a very kind of rigid, ritualized way. I mean, this is somebody who had what we would think of as a lover, a boyfriend, all of his adult life, and had, as all the sources agree, what we would say is a complete mental breakdown after Hephaestion died, which is just the year before Alexander did. So you're talking about a kind of relationship that is recognizably a deep emotional commitment. Obviously, also had wives whom he took for purposes of state. But, you know, Hephaestion was the guy.
Now, while we're on the subject of Alexander's inner life, here's another clip from the movie. This is an exchange between Alexander and his father, Philip of Macedon, who's played by Val Kilmer.
I've nothing to be ashamed of, you arrogant brat. I'll marry the girl if I want, and I'll have as many sons as I want, and there's nothing you or your harpy mother can do about it.
Why, you drunken man, must you think everything I do and say comes from my mother?
Because I know her heart, Bahira. And I see her in your eyes. You covet this throne too much.
Oliver Stone seems to actually have cast some Scots-accented actors, or Scots-Irish, I don't know, accented, to give a sense of this being kind of people not from the metropolis, but from the hinterlands, who are these Macedonians.
Right. I mean, one thing that's interesting about the accents is, okay, if they want to convey this sense that Macedonia is out of the cultured mainstream, that it's a bit of a backwater, and in order to do this, they decide on Irish accents. Okay, fine, let's go with that. But then it's very important to understand that although we are told that Alexander was this great pioneer of Greekness into the East, you know, that he carried the torch of Hellenism, so on. He didn't trust the Greeks proper. They were always plotting against him. They were always anti-Alexander. And the year that he died, there was a massive revolt against Macedon in Greece, in mainland Greece. And it shows just how tenuous his Greekness was.
What about the choices that are made as to which parts of Alexander's conquests should be part of the movie? That is, the Battle of Gaugamela is the central battle of the movie, but we don't see the battle or the Siege of Tyre, nor the Battle of Granicus River or Issus.
No, the handling of this battle is one of the sort of typically wrong things, I think, about the movie, which is that it sort of picks its way through highlights, you know, of Alexander's career, but there's never a sense of build-up, of a kind of organic movement forward. You're just sort of told that this is the climactic battle, but you never feel that it's climactic because you haven't seen anything else, really. Mm-hmm. Why they left out, for example, the cutting of the Gordian knot, mm-hmm. one of the great stories from antiquity that showed something about Alexander's character when, you know, he's faced with this legendary knot that nobody could untie, and whoever could untie it is going to be the master of the world, and he hacks it to pieces with a sword. That would be a great moment that illustrates something.
If you can imagine your platonic ideal of the Alexander movie, what, after 3 hours of sitting in a movie theater watching the story of Alexander the Great, what would be the most important thing that such moviegoers should come away with from his story?
Well, I mean, Alexander is somebody who continues to elude us as a character. There are people who see him as a sort of a great Greek gentleman. There are people who see him as a ruthless killer who ended up getting rid of a lot of his closest friends and advisors as his career went on. We know very little about him. And so I think, you know, my platonic ideal of the Alexander movie would be to forget about historical accuracy and write a good movie, which is a good story, which has a good conflict. And the conflict is, this guy goes east and realizes that he can run the whole show. Mm. And he is a Greek, essentially, culturally. And he becomes, for whatever mysterious reasons, enamored of or fascinated by the culture that he has conquered. And he starts to have a new idea. He sets out to conquer Persia, and then he wants to create this sort of Macedonian / Persian empires. And there's a little bit of that in the movie, you know, where he's in his bathrobe looking in a balcony in a sort of Babylonian deluxe hotel. And he says, oh, you know, these people are looking for a leader. But that's really the story.
Well, Daniel Mendelsohn, thank you very much for talking
thank
with
you.
Us about it. Daniel Mendelsohn, author, journalist, and lecturer in classics at Princeton University, talking to us about Alexander the Great, as rendered in the Oliver Stone film, Alexander. It opens in theaters tomorrow.